Trevor Zamparelli on 2FM
with Virgin Mobile. Go from scrolling through stories to creating your own. Freedom is calling. Virgin Mobile. Bring on amazing.
Now, we opened the show yesterday with the announcement from Michael O'Leary that the days of the 10 euro flight are over. So, I mean, what's going to happen now? What were holidays like before airlines like Ryanair, you know, budget airlines, shook it all up? And why are the all-inclusive holidays making a comeback? And I thought, who better to ask than the editor of Air and Travel magazine, Owen Corrie. How are you, Owen?
A happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you too. Isn't the weather fab?
Absolutely wonderful. Why would you want to be going on holidays anywhere except Ireland?
It's bloody expensive, Owen. That's why.
And it's never going to change. We're never going to get rain again, of course.
Oh, yes, exactly. It won't just last for the couple of days. Owen, now to kick things off, I think just for younger listeners maybe who never had the experience, how exactly did cheap flights change the travel industry?
Beyond recognition. It happened quite quickly in a couple of years, the late 90s, early noughties. Until then, going on holidays meant collecting your brochure, picking out somewhere in the sun, generally 2 weeks, not 1 week, going on a charter flight. Because Ireland wasn't regarded as one of the main markets, the charter flight took off at 5 a.m. because they were the only slots that the Irish holiday companies could afford. And you stayed there for 2 weeks in one place and you flew home in a charter and you paid an awful lot of money. You actually paid more in the 80s and 90s for your holiday than you do now. Even allowing for inflation and everything, just pound for euro, you paid more.
It's quite incredible. And on top of that, is it true that July was Ryanair's busiest month ever?
Busiest month ever, and they're now the second busiest airline in the world in terms of passenger numbers. They're putting about 17 million people on 3,000 flights a day. 17 million for the month and 3,000 flights a day. That means they're about 12, 14% ahead of where they were in 2019. Pretty much alone of the airlines that they're actually bigger than 2019. Good reason for that. They kept their pilots certified. They kept their pilots licensed and their aircraft certified through COVID. Didn't let people go. So they didn't run into that sort of problem with cancellations that other airlines ran into. The second thing is they're getting a lot of new aircraft. 2 a week arrived through the winter. And they are putting them in places that they have to fill them. So they're pretty good at filling those aircraft and doing it with the cheap fares that Michael O'Leary yesterday said might be coming to an end.
And I think the question a lot of people will have is, once you factor in, like, say, all the different elements of your trip, is it really that much cheaper to holiday abroad these days than it was all those years ago?
It's cheaper. The holiday abroad is cheaper in comparison with those years ago, because the economy of scale means that the number of people going to places means that everything came down relatively in price. Now, since COVID, we've seen the prices on the ground ride a little bit, those meals out, all of that. Mm. They're still cheaper than they are at home. But when you factor in things like the price of your flights and things like car hire and things, it would be pretty normal for home holidays to come out cheaper. What really skews our judgment is when we go out for a meal in Spain or Portugal and go out for a meal here, how much difference the price is for things like wine. And that leaves us thinking that we pay a lot more for a holiday at home. The average holiday at home actually works out cheaper.
I mean, going out for dinner, it's scandalous, Owen, the difference.
You can buy a nuclear reactor for the price of some of the meals out in Ireland.
I mean, it is wild, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's hard to know what's going on with the, because the supply prices and things have doubled. We've very famously Francis Brennan saying he wasn't putting steak on the menu. Getting staff is also a huge problem, but I do think that the prices are riding a little bit more high than you can justify in the current environment. Obviously, some people are chasing margin after losing a lot of money during COVID.
I know, but I still feel, I understand that, and I know that everyone went through a very difficult time, but I still think if they want people who live in the country to holiday in the country. It's just, it's astronomical what they're asking of a lot of people. Let's talk about the all-inclusive resort. I've done it myself. Were they going out of fashion? Are they coming back in? Why do people love it?
Some countries love them, others don't. They were very determinedly going out of fashion in Europe. The Spanish authorities in particular are trying to make life difficult for them, introduce restrictions. The all-you-can-drink restriction where you were allowed to just get, you know, booze up all day long. There was restrictions put on that in the Balearic Islands during COVID. So, and that was part of their social order legislation, that they wanted to have less free drink spewing around on the resorts. Places like the Dominican Republic, the entire tourism industry is built on all-inclusive. But places like, for instance, Mauritius toyed with it for a few years. Now they've decided that it's not really the way to go. From the country's point of view, they like getting people out of their big resorts and into local restaurants and sampling local fare. And the all-inclusive, the goal of the all-inclusive resort is to basically imprison their holidaymakers and make sure that all their spend is done within the resort.
But some people like that because, say, for example, if you have kids and stuff, it takes a lot of pressure and hassle out of it.
Big time, and the ones that are good at it could have 17 or 18 different restaurants in the same resort, four or five swimming pools, very, very good areas for children, and the water parks. You know, some of the water parks in the resorts are as good as the big water parks you pay to go into in holiday resort. An example would be what TUI have done, the tour operator. They know that they're not going to be out competing with people who book the cheapest flights in Ryanair and get their self-catering. But they look after everything when you're there. You're escorted to, you're transported from the airport, and they have very good kids clubs, things like that. Bring your family, and happy teenagers and happy children means happy parents.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, it might to some people seem like the easy option, but not everybody is taking it, because I suppose on the other hand nowadays Airbnb are doing very well. So what would be the main benefits then of curating your own holiday, like booking an Airbnb? Why would that be better for some people?
Cost and control. You actually have a wider choice of where you stay, but certainly it's worked out cheaper that people could pick. What I said at the beginning about the package holiday was you really had no choice where you went. You had to go to a certain number of hotels in a particular resort. You also had to fly at a particular time because there wasn't that much choice. In nowadays, if you're flying down to one of the key trunk routes that we have down to Malaga and Faro and Palma de Mallorca, places like that, you'll have 11 or 12 flights a day. So you pick the time of the day. You also can pick where you want to go. You don't need to be going to a particular hotel-y part of town. Airbnb takes out that it takes out that requirement for you to be a tourist, and you can actually go and live like a local, which is sort of one of the trendy words that they have now. And there are different variants of Airbnb tried down the years. House swapping was one of them, but Airbnb, because the tools on the internet made it possible for just to turn up and sleep in somebody's room. It's been huge runaway success, so much so that the tourism industry has no idea what to do with it. Should they be regulated? Should there be licensing, planning terms, all of that? And the hotel industry hates it.
So tell me then, if we just get it down to the nitty-gritty, like black and white, if I'm sitting at home now with my family and I'm trying to decide, am I going to do the all-inclusive? Am I going to book an Airbnb? Am I going to book a hotel and book my own activities? What are the kind of top two or three questions that I should be asking myself to figure it out?
Number one, how far is your airport from where you want to go? That's a big bugbear, particularly with some airlines calling an airport that's 90 kilometres away from the city by that city name. Getting to and from the airport has, particularly with the price of car hire this summer, that's become the big issue.
Okay, good point.
The real issue after that is how flexible do you want to be? How much stress do you want to remove from your holiday? Because when you're actually running things yourself, there is an element of stress. Does the description on Airbnb and does the location exactly match what you want? And how much of it do you want to organise yourself? People are getting much better at that. But quite a few years ago, people were unwilling to do that in a foreign language, in a foreign country. We've got very, very comfortable with travel. If you were to go through the countries of Europe, the only country that travels more per head of population every year than Ireland is Norway.
Oh, wow. Okay, so we're well travelled.
Now, listen, much up there.
Owen, before I let you go, I can't have you on and not ask you about what I think is the biggest snag at the moment, the current situation with the baggage handling in Dublin, because I'm off on my own holidays on Sunday, so I selfishly would like to know what am I in for.
Don't put your bag in the hold if you can avoid it at all. It's still a huge problem. It's
oh,
a big
but
problem
Owen, I'm
if
a
you're
woman.
Transferring.
I need 20 million dresses.
And shoes, that's a woman thing, isn't it?
Listen.
Don't quite get that. But if you're going through Heathrow, Amsterdam, places like that, that's where most of the problems, there aren't any problems really on a straight point-to-point getting on your flight in Dublin and getting off in Alicante or Malaga. Bags aren't being lost really at that level. The only thing that can go wrong is it doesn't get loaded. And those problems seem to have been overcome. They're working through the baggage problem in Dublin Airport, and the security queue problem seems to be gone away. People are still presenting far too early at the airport. More than half the people are presenting well outside the 4 hour, 3.5 hour requirement for long haul and 2.5 for short haul. And that has been causing problems, but that seems to be alleviating. We've got through 3 or 4 huge weekends at Dublin Airport without long security queues, so it's going in the right direction.
Okay, so will you say a prayer for me then for Sunday?
Absolutely, and the fairies on the alert, and the holy well has been opened for business.
Thanks a million, Owen. That was Owen Corry, travel commentator and editor of Air and Travel magazine. We'll be back after this.
Jennifer Zaffarelli. Weekday morning from 9 on 2FM.